Ever wonder how different media outlets, especially the independent ones, choose to frame the big news stories? How they pick what to focus on, what to kind of push aside, and how they tie it all back to you, the audience, and, well, how they keep the lights on.
Exactly.
Today, we're taking a deep dive into a really specific and I think pretty intriguing source, a newsletter from July 23rd, 2025. It's from a show called No Agenda Newsletter.
That's right. And this isn't, you know, your average news summary. It's more like a window, a very specific window, into how this one independent media group talks about its own content, lays out its unique financial model, and presents its view on what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal here really is to help you get the core nuggets from the source. Not just what they're saying, but how they're saying it, what kinds of strategies they might be using, and why that actually matters for you as someone trying to navigate all the information out there.
Okay, so let's unpack this newsletter's take on current events, specifically what they were previewing for their next show, the one on July 24th, 2025. It jumps right in using this sort of dismissive phrase.
Yeah.
It talks about the chattering classes of news media opportunists. That phrasing alone sets a certain tone, doesn't it?
It really does. It signals a kind of adversarial stance towards mainstream media right away.
And then it mentions accusations from former President Trump. The ones about former President Obama's alleged complicity in a treasonous scheme to rig the 2016 election and create the Russia hoax. Now, this is obviously a very charged and well-worn political narrative.
Right. We've heard that before.
Yeah.
But what's really compelling here, I think, is how the newsletter then takes a pretty sharp turn.
How so?
Well, instead of just, you know, repeating the accusation or trying to debunk it, it shifts the focus dramatically. Yeah. It actually says the real blame for the hoax lies with a gullible public.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a bold rhetorical move. It doesn't just critique the media figures or the politicians involved. It turns the lens right back onto the audience.
Onto us, basically.
Exactly. Questioning the logic, and I'm quoting the newsletter here, of believing a real estate mogul obsessed with owning high-end golf clubs all over the world could secretly be a Russian spy for Putin since, like, 1977.
Huh. So it's almost challenging the listener's own judgment.
Precisely. It forces you to think about your own role in how information spreads and takes hold.
And it doesn't stop there, does it? It brings up other things.
No, it keeps weaving this narrative.
Like, former President Obama insulting Trump back at that White House correspondence dinner, maybe around 2015.
Mm-mm. It frames those insults as a sort of precursor, a setup for what the newsletter calls the misery Trump was subjected to during his first 4 years in office.
And that misery, according to them, is directly because of Obama and John Brennan.
Right. And then connecting the dots further, this narrative ties into what they call recent Tulsi Gabbard DNI revelations about corrupt practices in the CIA in 2015 forward, specifically during Brennan's time there.
DNI being Director of National Intelligence, a pretty senior role.
Exactly. So they're suggesting these revelations from someone like Gabbard add weight to their claims about the CIA. It's all part of building this larger conspiracy narrative.
But then what about the impact? How do they frame how important all this actually is? Because that seems a bit contradictory.
It really is. That's a key point. On one hand, the newsletter explicitly says, and I quote, "In reality, none of this affects everyday Americans doing what they do."
Okay, so it doesn't matter to regular people.
That's what they say there. But then, almost in the next breath, they claim it presents fun times ahead for, quote, "the slice of Americans who love keeping up with news and trends."
It doesn't matter, but it's also fun entertainment for news junkies.
It's an interesting paradox, isn't it?
Yeah.
It lets them have it both ways, perhaps. Engage with the drama, but also dismiss its real-world significance.
And the commentary keeps going, right? It mentions Michelle Obama's podcast, too.
Yes, her semi-tell-all podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And notice the description of her co-host, her brother. The newsletter uses its own phrase, calling him her seemingly gay brother.
Hmm. Okay.
And it labels the podcast itself an airing of grievances. Then it highlights Barack Obama showing up on that podcast.
And what did he supposedly say?
Well, according to the newsletter, he told men to have gay friends and go see Broadway musicals. The newsletter specifically calls this quite odd.
So lots of judgment baked into the descriptions.
Definitely. And connecting this to the sort of bigger political picture, the newsletter throws in speculation like, maybe the walls are closing in. None of this is good for the Democratic Party.
Suggesting some kind of impending doom for the Democrats.
Right. But then, almost immediately, it dismisses all of it. These narratives, the Colbert stuff, the Epstein controversies, as, quote, all soap opera stuff outside of anything actually important like world peace or the starving poor.
Wow. So build it all up and then knock it down is just fluff.
It's a fascinating strategy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It allows them to dive into sensational topics, keep that news-loving audience engaged, but then sidestep maybe the factual burden by framing it all as just entertainment.
Even while calling themselves true independent media.
Exactly. It lets them participate in the media spectacle while simultaneously critiquing it. They're clearly not afraid of controversial takes or framing things in a, well, a very particular way.
Which brings us back to that question. How do they manage this? How do they get away with this kind of unfiltered commentary without the usual pressures you might expect?
Yeah, how do they operate?
Well, that's where their whole identity comes in. This No Agenda newsletter positions itself very clearly as your true independent media. It says point blank that it covers and analyzes news without interference.
And the reason?
Because, they claim, it's not owned by a large corporation nor beholden to advertisers. They really emphasize that independence.
Right. That's their core value proposition, it seems. Which leads us directly to, well, how do they pay the bills?
Exactly. How do they sustain this model?
The newsletter is very upfront about it. It stresses the show is solely supported by you, meaning the listener.
Mm-hmm.
And they use pretty strong language. No creepy advertisers or corporate or communist influencers.
Mm-hmm.
Telling us what to cover and how to slant things. That word creepy is quite evocative.
It definitely paints a picture.
It does. And they lay out multiple ways for listeners to contribute. It's a very direct, transparent listener support model, a big contrast to traditional media relying on ads or corporate money, which, you know, can bring its own set of pressures.
So what are some of these ways? They get pretty creative, don't they?
They really do. For instance, there's this special offer. A No Agenda PhD in Media Deconstruction.
A PhD, like an actual degree.
Well, not an academic one, obviously. It seems more like a clever branding or gamification thing. It's pitched as a 3-for-super deal, valid until August 1st.
Okay. And what do you get?
You get the PhD, an Ensignhood, and an executive producer credit. The idea seems to be making you feel like part of the show's history. It's eventual folklore, as they put it.
So it's about building community, making listeners feel like active participants, almost like fellow researchers in the deconstruction they claim to do.
Exactly. It's about more than just money. It's about belonging. Then there's the V4V do-it-yourself donation.
V4V?
Value for value. It's a concept that's really taken off in podcasting and independent media. The idea is you, the listener, donate based on the value you feel you get from the content.
Bypassing advertisers completely.
Totally. You can give whatever you want, they say. PayPal for recurring, Stripe for credit cards. And they frame it very personally. The newsletter actually says, donating is love.
Turning a transaction into like an act of support.
Yeah, it personalizes the whole appeal.
That's definitely creative. What else? Are there more standard options?
Oh, yeah. There's a regular EP or executive producer donation. That was described as a forever credit. So it's about acknowledging those dedicated supporters in a lasting way.
Like getting your name on a plaque, sort of?
Kind of like that, yeah. And for people who prefer, you know, the old school methods, you can send a check. They give a P.O. box in El Cerrito, California.
And they even mention foreign checks.
They do. Non-USA checks written in foreign currency are accepted, which really signals they have or want a global audience. It broadens their potential support base quite a bit.
Okay. And recurring donations, like subscriptions.
Yep. Several tiers there, too, and they give details. The favorite, apparently, is $33.33 a month. Which they note has overtaken the once popular $11.11 of the month.
Huh. Specific numbers.
Very specific. And they say the $4 a week or 75 cents an hour subscription is now very popular. There's even a layaway plan.
A layaway for what?
A $50 a month knighthood layaway for 20 months. So a long-term commitment option for that knighthood status.
Oh, that's detailed. The $33.33 number, is there significance there?
Possibly. Numbers like that often act as like psychological anchors in donation models.
Yeah.
It feels specific, maybe like a sweet spot contribution level for committed fans. It suggests a strong community connection more than just a random donation.
So this whole transparent direct funding model that's presented as the key to their freedom.
Absolutely. That's the core argument. By relying only on listeners, they can deliver content without interference, free from the corporate or political agendas they believe influence other media.
It's like direct democracy for media funding.
In a way, yeah. The audience's financial support is theoretically the only influence. removing outside pressures. It's definitely a compelling case study in how alternative media can operate and define independence today.
What a deep dive this has been, just into this one newsletter. We've really unpacked how this particular independent outlet frames some complex, pretty controversial political narratives.
Mm-hmm. Including those theories about public gullibility.
Right. And then contrasting that with its own self-proclaimed role as basically entertainment.
While also pulling back the curtain on this very distinctive listener-funded model that they argue makes their unique voice possible.
You can really see how they carefully position both their content and their, well, financial independence.
Yeah, it gives us a fascinating glimpse into a slice of the media world that throws out the traditional advertising model in favor of direct listener cash.
Yeah.
And that shapes everything, the content, the tone, how the audience sees their role in it all.
So thinking about all this, what really stands out to you about how this kind of media works, or maybe how it gets listeners involved so directly, so explicitly?
That's a great point to land on. It really raises a bigger question for all of us, doesn't it? In this world where we're just flooded with information and the media landscape feels so fragmented, how much does understanding where the money comes from and what a source says its mission is actually help you? How does it help you critically evaluate the stories, the narratives they're presenting?
Something to definitely mull over as you keep navigating the vast and sometimes confusing world of news and information out there.